With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome in to the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast, the official podcast of your New Orleans Pelicans, a podcast dedicated to everything you need to know about the squad. Hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, and those who cover the NBA on a daily basis. It's time to flock up. The New Orleans Pelicans Podcast starts right now.
All right, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast. It is Friday, TGIF, and more importantly, one day before a home playoff game over at the Smoothie King Center. Jim Eichen off for NewOrleansPelicans.com here, as always. Sir, game two, I didn't think it was going to be that much different than game one. We talked about adjustments back on Wednesday in terms of what happens come playoff time, but did you expect what took place on Tuesday?
Not at all. I mean, I think I said several times between game one and game two tipping off that I thought both teams were going to shoot the ball better, thought both teams were going to play better, at least offensively. I think both teams' performance defensively in game one, there was no reason to complain about that. But as it turned out, really, Oklahoma City was the only team that came through in game two and said, we're going to play a lot better. I mean, New Orleans offensively, I think, was a little bit worse than they were in game one. And so that spelled big trouble.
We always talk about adjustments and things that happen. And obviously, we're going to have a little radio roundtable and get Aaron Summers and Todd Graffinini's take as to what they do and what do the Pels do here for game three to try to get back into the series here and make it a series. You got the next two at home, Jim. They're really good on the road. That's why tomorrow is crucial. Get tomorrow, you can knock that out. But when I look at adjustments, one thing that we saw Oklahoma City sort of do is say, all right, that's fine. You want to try to take, you know, SGA away. We're going to run some screens on the outside. And then Chet Holmgren started knocking down some threes. And it almost seemed like the Thunder came out looking to establish the three-point line. Or was it just how the game started?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it was that they got the game to much more of their style of play than what game one was. I mean, I know we're going to talk about this, I'm sure, a little bit in the roundtable. But I thought, I didn't realize how much game the pace was favorable towards New Orleans and then how much of a factor that would be. I think Oklahoma City just was able to play a lot faster in game two, especially in the first quarter, use their athleticism, use some of their youth, use, you know, some of their talent really across the board. I mean, they were able to spread the Pelicans out and get a bunch of threes. I mean, they got a lot of threes in game one too, but didn't make them. I mean, they just got on a roll in the first quarter. And I think that was kind of the pivot point of the entire night, that through the first 5 or 6 minutes, it was like you're going to Jonas Valanciunas, you're getting a lot of good stuff from him as far as scoring. It's kind of an even game, and then all of a sudden the floor completely opens up, the Thunder start making threes, and you look up and you're down double figures by the end of that first quarter.
Yeah, it's incredible. We were watching at the watch party at Lucy's, and you couldn't have started better in terms of Jonas. It was a great grading plan. It was just like it. But they made three shots. They happened to be three. And the next thing you know, you're trailing. And I'm like, what just happened? And that's the difference of the three-point shot. Now, before we go to the radio roundtable, one final thing. When you are at home, that crowd, that energy tends to maybe help, especially guys off the bench. In game one, bench was, you know, you would have liked a little bit more play. In that second game, really a non-factor. The bench has got to establish itself here in game three.
Yeah, and I think if you want to be optimistic and positive about what we've seen recently, obviously, the long homestand was rough. They won only one out of those six games. But in the most recent game, home game, the play-in game against Sacramento, I thought the bench was huge that game between Najee, Jose, and Larry Nance. I think Larry Nance and Najee, I think both of those guys, that was among their best performances of the season. So you're right. You hope at home that you get a better bench performance. But I think I also noted, too, watching the games Thursday night, it's interesting that two of the three teams that lost the first two games on the road, came back and won game three at home. And really the most interesting comparison home road was the Orlando Magic. I mean, hopefully this happens in this series as well with the Pelicans, but I think a lot of people declared the Magic done, that, you know, series is over. They look terrible in the games in Cleveland. They couldn't make a shot. They come back at home and win by 38 points in their first home game that they've had in their arena in like 5 years. So I think we've seen a bunch of examples of that where over the years, where through the first two games, a team looks bad on the road and then they come back home and it's immediately a different series. So, I mean, if you're the Pelicans, you hope that you can kind of duplicate what the Orlando Magic did, and to a lesser extent, the Philadelphia 76ers as well. Lost the first two games at home, came back for game three. Joel Embiid scores 50 points, and now they're pretty much back in the series down 2-1.
All right, well, coming up, our radio roundtable will break down a little bit more what took place in game two, and more importantly, what can happen in game three. Then Jim will laugh at the Lakers. Is that what we're going to do for our last segment? I think that just makes sense. Let's just laugh at them.
That's probably
60 seconds of cackling. What do you want to do?
That's one of the most accurate predictions about the NBA that you're going to hear all weekend.
It makes me feel better, at least, right? Here comes the radio roundtable next.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, time now for another edition of the Radio Roundtable. Voice of the New Orleans Pelicans, Todd Graffinini, joining us as well as Aaron Summers. Aaron, I feel like I just saw you. I did over at Lucy's. It was fun. We had a good time out there.
Yeah, it was great. I've been loving the crowds. There's so many Pelicans fans that have come out. People just flooding in with gear, and it's been really awesome. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten a win yet, but I've got to give it to the Pelicans fans. They're definitely excited for the playoffs.
And Todd, that's one of the things that... one of the reasons we couldn't wait to get back into the playoffs, because it is different. It is a different atmosphere. You just came from a place that looked loud, was loud. I saw a lot of people that cover the Pels that were there kept mentioning how OKC showed up and stuff. And it is. It is different. It is time to take your fandom to another level.
Well, you could tell that the Oklahoma City fans have not experienced playoff basketball in a while, and they definitely showed up, and they were loud the entire time. And you know, kudos to them. They were able to get a couple of wins. But, you know, as we say in the NBA playoffs, they held serve. Now the Pelicans have a chance to get back at it at home. And, you know, you're right. And I know Jim will attest to this because he's been here a long, long time. The home playoff games just haven't been a regular occurrence around here in the last decade. So every time you have one, and hopefully we get to a point where we're, you know, taking it for granted almost, but when you have one, it's a special deal, and you've got an opportunity as a city to really get behind the team.
Yeah, and I mean, I always tell, for example, the associates, the interns that we have here for a year, that I hope
your minions
get to,
be right. Just be honest,
not mine. Your minions, the teams. Yeah. I always tell them, because they're going to be here for 1 year, that I always hope that they get to experience the playoffs, because it's totally different from the regular season. I feel like if you're here in a year that they don't make the playoffs, you get to see some really fun evenings in the Smoothie King Center. But then when the playoffs come, you're just like, this is unbelievable compared to what I've seen throughout the year. So I'm sure we're going to see the same thing on Saturday. I'm excited to be back at home for the playoffs as well. And with the 50% off concessions, this might be the first time that I pass up the free media meal before the game.
Don't get crazy, Jim.
You're probably right. I'll probably still do that. But no, you might see me in the concession stand on Saturday. So looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, you can't beat the fact that
you
50%
can't see
off.
The air quotes. That's he said bar.
Oh, is that what he was doing? Yeah. Well, he does body shots on our broadcast on the road, so it works like that. No, actually, he's very well behaved. Look, let's get to what happened. Game one and game two, biggest difference, biggest takeaways. Ty, we'll start with you since you were there. What was your biggest takeaway from the first two games in Oklahoma City?
Unfortunately, in game one, a old bugaboo came up again, and that's an opportunity to win a game, and you just let it slip away, And it was interesting because just talking to John DeShazer after game one and before game two in the pregame, game one was like, well, it was disappointing you didn't win, but you had to be encouraged by the way the Pelicans played. I mean, mm-hmm. You really could pinpoint a lot of it to the fact that they just did not make open shots. And that was something that we had grown accustomed to seeing the team doing, especially on the road. I just think game two, I don't think anybody expected what we saw, and it was the physicality of the Oklahoma City Thunder that really was the determining factor. It had a lot to do with what happened in game one as well, but we were able to overcome it a little bit, just didn't make the shots. But that's a tough thing to have to take because it's going to be that way in the playoffs, and you have to match the opponent's physical style of play.
I think physicality is definitely something that the Pelicans expected. They've been talking about how the level of physicality has increased even over the last month or so of the season. Players across the league have talked about how fouls are being called differently. I think to Graf's point, though, that first game down the stretch, it was the turnovers. They turned the ball over 7 times in the fourth quarter. That game alone, they turned the ball over 14 times, led to 14 points.
I don't want to interrupt you, Aaron, but the Pelicans had 2 turnovers at halftime in game one. Mm. 2. So they were doing a great job.
Right. So then that's 12 in the second half. And then it carries over to game two where they have 18 turnovers that lead to 22 Oklahoma City points. We know OKC is the best in the league at steals per game. However, they've only had 5 in each game. These are unforced errors by the Pelicans. And that just is something that execution-wise can happen when you're in a playoff game against the number one seed. So to me, that's got to be the biggest takeaway overall in both games.
I agree with you 100%. However, just remember this. Offensive fouls are counted as turnovers.
8.
Do you want to get into that?
It's part of
Would
it.
Would you like to?
I mean, if that's how the game is being called.
Yeah. I'm going to withhold comment on that.
My biggest kind of broad takeaway from the first two games was that I think the Pelicans can compete with the Thunder without Zion, but they need a few things to go the right way. One of them is, it seems like pace from the first two games, that they have to play a slower style and not get up and down against the Thunder, because when OKC was able to spread them out defensively in the first quarter in particular, they're able to go on a run. And I just feel like the Pelicans, especially without having Zion available, they don't want to get into a game where it's going to be 120 to 115. They want it to be more low scoring. And I mean, mm-hmm. they need some breaks, and they need to be able to make some shots. I mean, even without making shots, they still almost won game one. But I just feel like they can compete with them, but it's just you're going to have to do a bunch of things well, and you're going to have to do a bunch of things a lot better. Definitely game two, but also some of the things that you didn't do well in game one.
Well, to further Aaron's point, the Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, off the top of my head, I don't think they had their first turnover in game two till late mm-hmm. in the second quarter. And a lot of the Pelicans' offense is predicated on getting those steals. Look, we're second in the league in steals mm-hmm. behind Oklahoma City Thunder, by the way. But that leads to a lot of transition, easy buckets. And when they're not turning it over and making shots, and they made pretty much everything in the first half the other night, you're not able to get out and run because they can get back and set their defense.
Yeah, whether it's more aggressiveness, whatever it is, you just have to be so much more physicality. You have to be so much more disruptive because, like you said, that's what the Pelicans' defensive bread and butter has been all season. And if OKC is able to just do everything so easily, just run through all of their sets with so little resistance, you're going to have similar results of what you had in game two, where they were just able to score way too many points in quick fashion.
All right, guys, let's start with you, Aaron. Which Pels player might benefit from coming home for game 3 and 4? Jim and I just talked about it in the opening segment. When it comes to the postseason, that kind of atmosphere tends to maybe pick up some guys off bench and things of that nature. Are you going there? Or are you going with a starter?
Well, I mean, I think naturally the first thought is Jose Alvarado, how much he feeds off of the crowd, the energy that he brings. It just hasn't been there on the road. He's averaging 16.7% from the floor overall on the road against OKC. 2.5 points per game, 14% from outside. Those are far and below his numbers at home in the Smoothie King Center, where he shoots 40% overall, 31.5% from outside, doubles his points easily. So maybe he can get going, be a little more of a just a presence off the bench, add some points, because the points production from the bench has pretty been non-existent.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go bench as a whole, just to kind of continue that thought. You got to get those guys involved scoring-wise. We know what type of energy they're going to bring. They usually do, especially at the Smoothie King Center, but they got to be able to put the ball in the bucket. Because right now the Pelicans as a team are not scoring the ball. That's 92 points in both games. Haven't even come close to 100 in the first two. And that's a team thing, mm-hmm. but you've got to get some productivity off the bench.
Yeah, I had Jose down as one of the players that I listed. And by the way, in his last two home playoff games against the Suns, he had two steals in both of those games. I think one of them was catching Chris Paul from behind. So I know a lot of fans are going to be excited to see him in the playoffs back in the blender. But my number one pick for this one was Brandon Ingram. And part of why I said him, obviously he had a rough first two games, but over the scope of the entire season, we talked about a bunch of times, especially in March and April, how several of the Pelicans' three-point shooters have done better on the road than they mm-hmm. have at home, which is a big reason why the results were the way that they were. But Brandon Ingram actually doesn't qualify for that at all. During the regular season at home, he shot 51%. From the field, 44 on threes, 82 at the free throw line. And his road splits were 48, 27, and 79. So he actually was the one guy among the main scorers that was a lot better at home over the course of the season. And also, if you remember, he missed the entire homestand where they went 1-5. And he missed the four-game road trip where they went 4-0. So I wonder if he had played, you know, how much different the homestand would have been. Mm-hmm. But I'm just hoping to see him be able to bounce back, and I want to see him get a little jolt from when they do the starting lineup introductions and he's the last guy introduced, how he always gets a huge ovation. So I want to see him just carry over what he's done. I mean, if you look at the team's results in the last bunch of home games that he played in, it wasn't bad. They were over 500 in the last, you know, 10 to 15 home games that he played in. Mm-hmm. But it was the March/April homestand where he didn't play where they really struggled.
Guys, who maybe is the biggest X factor for game three for the Pelicans?
I, to Jim's point, am going to go with Brandon Ingram, but in a different way. Kind of got to go assists overall. The ball movement is going to be really key. B.I. usually leads the team with about 6 a game. He's had 3 on average against OKC so far. But the team is about 10 under their average on the season. And they're not moving the ball. They're not playing their usual offense that they do. And we've seen they're not getting great looks sometimes. They're getting stagnant. So I think their best offense is when they're sharing the ball. They're trusting each other, like Coach Green likes to say. So I think if they can get that assist number above 25, then that's going to lead to a lot better result as far as points per game.
Does my answer have to be a physical thing?
No.
No, this is open-ended.
It's all yours.
Pride. Have some pride. I mean, it's got to be tiring if you're a Pelicans player to watch this OKC team. This is now 3 times in a row we have seen them, going back to a regular season game. Remember when the Pelicans had the 5-point lead mm-hmm. and with 3 minutes left and didn't score and weren't able to pull it out. This is 3 games in a row we watched this OKC team basically come in here and run their mouths against us. And there really hasn't been a response, and that's what has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, OKC, they have not been a playoff team. They got into the play-in last year. They did defeat the Pelicans, but this is a new experience for most of that roster, and they're playing like they're a perennial, you know, Western Conference playoff team, which they are not. The Pelicans actually have more experience than the OKC Thunder. They got to have a little pride and show it, especially in front of their own fans.
My biggest X factor for the team is 3-point shooting. I mean, during the regular season, they shot 38% from 3-point range, which is 4th in the league. in the playoffs, in the two games in Oklahoma City, they shot 27.7%, which is 13th out of the 16 playoff teams. Mm-hmm. I'm actually kind of amazed that there's three teams that have shot worse in the playoffs than they have. But, I mean, if you've watched some of this series, I think two of these three teams wouldn't surprise you that Orlando has the third worst three-point percentage, Cleveland has the second worst. But the team that has the worst three-point percentage, you would be absolutely stunned by, and that is the Denver Nuggets. Wow. So it just goes to show you, you don't have to necessarily shoot threes amazing if you execute in so many other areas of the game, which obviously the Nuggets have done that so far. But I think three-point shooting team-wise, and then for me, Trey Murphy is the other X factor with his three-point shooting as well and just his scoring ability that he has the knack for being able to have huge games and get hot from 30 feet from the basket. And if they can get those two things, I mean, you're going to have to, you would think you're, there's no way if you can't get to 100 points that you're going to be able to win, even if the games are a little bit more low scoring. So that's something that if they can make more shots, I mean, obviously they'll have a much better chance of breaking through for the first win.
And y'all, I think you'll agree with me. When you watch playoff games and you watch Eastern Conference and Western Conference, they never follow the same script. Every game is different. And you got to believe that the Pelicans at some point are going to score the basketball because they've been a really good scoring team all year long.
You would think that for sure. Final thing, guys, biggest surprise you from the rest of the Western Conference playoff picture here as we take a look around. Got Clippers, Mavericks tied at 1-1. T-Wolves lead the Suns 2-0 in that series. Actually played tonight. The Nuggets are now 3-0 over the Lakers. And I'm just, you know, not that I wasn't paying attention to you guys, but one of the Laker reporters just tweeted from last night, I guess, a fire Darvin chant has broken out from the segment of the crowd in a home game to the Lakers. That's a them problem, Todd, as you would like to say.
Got to find a scapegoat. Have to find somebody to blame.
Well, maybe they can just, you know, get a whole new team like they've done the last 2 years next year. I mean, let's just train everybody.
Well, I will say this. It was remarkable driving in this morning. I'm listening to, obviously, the NFL draft. First round was yesterday. So I'm thinking of you know, hearing takes, they were laughing at the Falcons, which I'm sure made your morning, Todd. But there in the middle of all of that, there was the, well, who is going to the Lakers? Is it Giannis? I mean, they already have half the NBA going to LA to help LeBron, because I didn't know if you know this. It's about LeBron. So everyone's already on their way over there. Is it Giannis? Is it Tatum? I mean, people are being traded left and right, and it's April 26th. I didn't know if you knew that, at least nationally how it works. But what has been a big surprise for you?
I just think the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves have handled the Phoenix Suns. I mean, look, this is we talk about matchups all the time. Well, the Minnesota Timberwolves never, in the three games against the Suns this year, they never lost by less than 10. It was a double-digit victory three times for the Suns against the Timberwolves. They dominated them. And now it's been completely the opposite. And we go back to that word again, physicality. Yeah. Minnesota has used their size, and they have been outstanding. And their big three, when you're talking about the Phoenix Suns' big three, they haven't shown up. And Minnesota, that has been a team that is, you know, they took a lot of heat last year the way they were constructed, and now you're starting to see it really, really pay off, especially with the emergence of Naz Reid, who has been brilliant for them off the bench. You know, he was starting when Cat got hurt, mm-hmm. and Naz Reid got a ton of minutes down the stretch, and now, I mean, what a weapon they have as a sixth man.
I think it's really interesting that you bring that up, because it's just the defense that they've been playing with that's been so dominant, and the Suns haven't reached 100 points in either of the games so far, which
that's
is something
incredible. That's incredible.
It only happened five times this season for them to not hit that century mark. So you think about all the guys they have on their team. Well, Booker's clearly getting annoyed because he fouled out in 15 seconds, got his fifth and sixth foul within 15 seconds of each other in the last game because he was so annoyed with how everything has been.
Yeah, Jade McDaniels talking to him,
too. So I think that has been just surprising how dominant that they've been. But also, I think we just have to talk about the Lakers, right? Like, I mean, so I was reading an article that said if you get swept in back-to-back years by the same team. What does that mean? You got vacuumed? I mean, we're going to have to figure it out, right? Like, we're going to have to come up with a term.
Well, here's some more motivation for everyone as to why we would dearly love to see a Nuggets sweep of the Lakers, because our Monday game would be at 7:30 and not 8:30. So there you go.
That's a good point, too.
You know, I'm just being selfish.
I thought I was going to be the one that was the most petty towards the Lakers, so I tip my cap to you, Aaron, for taking over that role. No, I think my biggest surprise so far from the Western Conference is playoffs, is that we talked all season about how great the Western Conference is, how amazing the playoffs were going to be, how tough some of these series are going to be. And so far, there really haven't been that many close games. I mean, really, game one of Pelicans Thunder.
That was the best game of the weekend.
Right.
Yeah, it really was.
And then I think game two of Lakers Nuggets, where Jamal Murray makes that game winner. Besides that, there's been a lot of games that have been blowouts. There's been a lot of double-figure final margins. And by the way, too, speaking of Murray's game winner, I'm glad we have a roundtable here because I wanted to put this out for a vote. The Denver media company, they're called DNVR, they suggested two nicknames for that shot that Jamal Murray made. One of them is Hail Murray, and the other is the Laker Breaker. So which of those do you guys prefer?
I'm going with the latter because it really wasn't a Hail Mary. I mean, it was a 15-foot.
Yeah, they're just using that as a play on words, obviously.
I get it, but I'm going.
So you like Laker Breaker?
Yeah, because I broke them. Oh, yeah. They ain't coming back from that. So that was
they absolutely collapsed at home in their last game. Mm-hmm. And you thought they would get a little more boost from being back in L.A. and down the stretch, man. I mean, LeBron's dribbling the ball off his knee and turning it over.
That's a real shame.
AD only scored 3 points in the fourth quarter.
I hate to see it.
Russell's getting booed because he went 0-for-7.
How many times has D'Angelo Russell just lit us up, and that guy couldn't make a shot?
He wouldn't even
make a shot.
It's incredible. Let me add this to you guys, and we'll wrap up here, because it is something that's interesting that you brought up, Jim, and it was going to be my takeaway. When you look at the standings, remember how we ended? OKC, Denver, Minnesota, top three. Then Clippers, Mavs, Suns, Lakers, Pels, Kings, and Warriors. But y'all remember throughout the season, we kept talking, there was a clear separation, 1, 2, and 3. And then it was a 3-team battle, 4-team battle for 4, 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. And then you had those teams 8, 9, 10, really Lakers and Warriors kind of bring up the pack. So we're really surprised by what we saw, because this is the one thing that stands out to me. Those are the most consistent teams this season. OKC's been on 1, 2, or 3 all year. Minnesota's been 1, 2, or 3 all year. Denver's defending champs. They're 1, 2, 3 all year. Should we be surprised? They look the best. They look the best in this postseason. They have their identity. They know who they are. They have their players making plays. And all three of those guys, and it's something to look in towards next season for the Pels, they have an MVP candidate. I mean, I know Luka made the award list, but Anthony Edwards, you said at the beginning of the season that guy was one of those guys along with SGA. Well, SGA's in there as well. Anthony Edwards and some guy named Jokic. So should we be surprised that those three teams have looked the best? They know who they are. They have their identity, and they have a MVP candidate.
I'm not surprised at all about Nuggets Lakers. I mean, because that's, what is that, 11 in a row, 12 in a row that they've won? Yes.
Don't shortchange them. It's 12.
Yes. Is it 12? It's tough to keep track. But I'm not surprised by that. But I am definitely surprised by Wolves Suns a little bit. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I do think that OKC and Minnesota in particular, I think we're a little bit, I don't know if disrespected, that might be too strong of a word, but I don't think people took into account how great they were during the regular season as much when they started making predictions about the playoffs. In terms of Denver, I almost feel like they were kind of under the radar, because as the great Charles Barkley lined up last night after the game, people spent so much time talking about the Lakers and the Warriors this season that it was like you forgot, like, okay, this is the defending champions, and they came back and they won 55-plus games. I don't think that they took... And I don't say this as a negative. I don't think they took the regular season necessarily as like, by all means, we have to win as many games as we possibly can. They were kind of laying low. And now that the playoffs start, you see the same team that went 16-4 during the playoffs last season.
Well, two of those three teams have been closing games out. That's the other thing.
I was going to go.
Oklahoma City and Denver are really, really good clutch teams. Minnesota, not that great. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you can... I mean, you see what happened, you know, the other night against the Pels. That's just two games in the last three now that Oklahoma City has won because they were able to close and the Pelicans were not. And I said this on the post game the other night. You would expect that this series, and I'm still very fully hoping that this series is going to go a long way. I don't think OKC is that much better than the Pelicans. That's five games now that three have been decided at the buzzer, basically. Mm-hmm. So you got to turn it around in the last 5 minutes. But no, as far as the two out of the three, I'm not surprised at all.
That was fun though, guys. Thank you as always, Miss Erin Summers, Todd Graffinini, part of our Pels Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:30 for the tip off.
Y'all will be in the concourse again.
Yay.
Outside of 121 and. There should be a lot of foot traffic around you guys at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Don't forget, 50% off concessions all the way to tip off. Thank you, guys. All right, well, that was fun as always. Our radio roundtable. Jim, our final segment's real simple. We will laugh at the Lakers for a good 2, 3 to 4, 5 minutes. If you would like, I can just put it on loop. No, actually, look, the Western Conference playoff picture. It's interesting. We thought it was going to be easy 6-7 games, all the different series. Is that what we've seen though so far?
No, not so far. But I do think that. The biggest thing to watch this weekend is going to be across the board, especially in the Pelicans-Thunder series, obviously, as well as the Timberwolves-Suns, is can the team that went down 0-2 that now has two weekend games at home, can they answer back and make it a series? I think the Mavericks-Clippers is going to go a long way almost regardless. I'd be shocked if either of those teams wins it in less than five games. I mean, you got to figure, unless one of them wins the next three, it's going at least six. So we've seen some really good playoff series between those teams over the last 5 years or so, and I expect that to be the case as well. But, I mean, it's kind of the moment of truth, honestly, for Phoenix and New Orleans, that they're going to have to answer with Phoenix playing late Friday night and then the Pelicans have the Saturday afternoon game. Mm-hmm. This is your chance to make it a series, to make it competitive. If you lose, we know that the stat, it's something like 0 and 155 for teams that start out down 3-0, that no one's ever come back from that. The Celtics almost did it in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They were down 3-0. They won the next three, but then they ended up losing game seven to their just arch nemesis, the Miami Heat. So we know, I mean, if you lose, if you go down 0-3, you're pretty much done. But this will be the chance for Phoenix and New Orleans in particular, I think, to save the Western Conference playoffs from being pretty disappointing compared to what our expectations were starting it.
Yeah, and you look at the Eastern Conference Celtics Heat, they will play tomorrow at 5. That's a 1-1 series. Cavs Magic, that's a 2-1 Cleveland series. They play tomorrow. The only game tonight in the Eastern Conference is Bucks Pacers. That's a 1-1 series, and you got the Knicks and 76ers. They play on Sunday, and that is a 2-1 series there. So, look, I'm with you. We could still see these games maybe go 6-7, things of that nature. As far as the Pels go tomorrow, though, it's just, hey, you got to come out and you heard Graf say it in a roundtable, pride. You were saying, hey, look, you want to see some of the, you know, train, some of the three-point shooting. I just think, too, it's about a confidence thing. Go in there and win. You want to get them to start feeling a little bit of that pressure, right?
For sure.
You can get that win Saturday, come back, find a way to get that win Monday. Now you have a path, Jim, because this is the best team on the road. Mm-hmm. So game, you know, five will be at OKC. And now there's a little pressure on them because if the Pels can win, and look, we've seen them go on a couple of game winning streak mm-hmm. here, you know? I mean, I don't see why they can't. Like, that's why tomorrow's so key. Then find a way, 1 point is fine with me on Monday. And now you're on the road, you feel better, you know, than maybe they do here as well. And a little pressure on it, and you steal that one, and then you can come home and close it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great to get some momentum going. I mean, obviously, realistically, you're going to have to win both of these home games to get back in the series and not be down 3-1 going into game five in Oklahoma City. But, I mean, I give Oklahoma City all the credit, and they deserve it. They had a great regular season. They won the most games in a very difficult, formidable Western Conference. They played really well in game two, showed how much talent they had, so on and so forth. But I think for the Pelicans, it's about kind of showing you won 49 games this year. You almost won 50 games in a really good conference. The gap between the number one seed and the eighth seed is about as small as it gets. It's you want to be able to show that, you know, just how good of a team you were. And to be able to do that, you need to make this a series and not have it be something that people look back on and say that, you know, Oklahoma City just was by far the better team.
Yeah, no doubt. Jim Eichenhofer, as always, man, appreciate it. JimEichenhofer.com is the way to go check out. And, of course, NewOrleansPelicans.com. We will see you on Monday right here on the New Orleans Pelicans podcast.
Thanks for listening to the New Orleans Pelicans podcast. Join us 3 times per week on Pelicans.com. The Pelicans mobile app, the iHeartRadio app, or where you get your podcast. And be sure to give Jim and Gus a follow on X at Jim_Eichenhofer and GCAT_17. We'll see you next time, right here on the New Orleans Pelicans podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.